It's a pleasure to be here today. Whenever I'm introduced from being from California, I have to be fully open about that. My dad is still involved with a farming and ranching operation in California. He's about the only person that did not run for governor in California this last year. I apologize for my voice. Those of you that really know me know that this is actually a blessing for you all to hear me in this voice. But I want to go through the markets rather quickly and discuss with you kind of the situation and outlook, and then many of the factors that are fundamentally influencing the cattle markets as we speak. I'm from the Livestock Marketing Information Center, and that center involves 25 land-grant universities. We began in 1955, five USDA agencies, and the major livestock commodity groups. So I'm going to give you a fairly broad overview based on our input, and much of what we get comes from our member institutions. So we'll kind of jump right into this, and we'll do a little bit of review of where we are on the cattle markets and cattle prices. We use Southern Plains as our baseline market. The 5 to 6 weight animals in the Southern Plains have bounced around here in the $3 to $14 range in recent weeks. That's a little higher than we anticipated back in the summer. If we move on to the 7 to 8 weight steers, those prices in recent weeks in the Southern Plains have bounced around in the dollar per pound range. That is quite a bit higher than we anticipated back in the summer. Let me stop here for a second. I'm going to go through this. Dr. Rush often accuses me of not showing slides or overheads or PowerPoint, but I show a movie. And so when you stand back and look at this, the blue lines on most of these will be this year. The dotted line will be last year, and the red line with the dots will be the previous five-year average. So the key, as I'm going very fast, is to look for the blue line. Now let's move to the Fed cattle market. And the Fed cattle market, compared to what we thought last summer, is a bunch higher than we anticipated. And a bunch is a scientific economic term. It's, well stronger than we anticipated. Now, the normal seasonal pattern has been discussed here this morning is that Fed cattle prices typically peak out in that March-April time frame. This year in 2004, they will not. They will peak in March-April. I suspect the Fed cattle prices will be in the low 80s per hundredweight, but maybe a little stronger than the futures market is indicating. So what we are in is an abnormal year due to very unique sets of circumstances. So we're going to talk about some of those. And one of the most fundamental things that's gone on, and I'm an economist, I look at beef tonnage. And if you look at the blue line here over recent weeks, we produce between 50 and 70 million pounds a week less beef than we did last year and less than normal. And that's really the key. And how do we get in this situation overall? Well, we went into the spring months in a very current situation in our feedlots where it's cyclically small cattle supplies. And then, already being current, the Canadian situation evolved with the BSE cow, and we continued to pull U.S. cattle into the system through feedlots to replace the Canadian already being current. And basically what we have was an unsustainable situation, and now we have prices and production that really reflect this ongoing pulling ahead of animal and the impact on beef production. Beef production has been pulled down not only by slaughter being down on steers and heifers, but also significant declines in the weights. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But first, let me digress and describe here kind of the fundamentals that happened. So let's go back to October, because I can barely remember October. And Fed cattle prices were $33 per hundredweight, higher than they were a year ago. So we're doing a year-to-year comparison. One reason I go back to October is that we have most of the data for October, so we can kind of try to estimate these things. So number one on our list is beef supply declined 12%. In fact, the supply of beef from steers and heifers was down nearly 15% from a year ago during the month of October. So the number one there really means that the most important factor influencing cattle prices was the supply decline year to year that was very much tied to the Canadian situation, but also fundamentally to where we are cyclically in the United States cattle cycle and our market situation. So what would an economist estimate that impact is? Well, if you can see yellow on white, I'm not sure you can. I try to make my slides almost unreadable so you really can't see that. But the economic impact here is about $21 per hundredweight. That says 18 to 22. To tell you, I really don't know the answer, but very close to $21 per hundredweight on a live steer basis, year-to-year change of that $33 was caused by the reduction in beef supply in the domestic U.S. market after adjusting for imports and exports. So supply is huge. It's by far the biggest component. Again, about 21 of that $33 per hundredweight year-to-year increase in cattle prices. Now, importantly, too, we have beef demand. Beef demand has been improving in the U.S. market, and we'll come back to that. Our estimates here for the month of October were that beef demand was up, but not near as much as the supply side. As we've already explained, $21 out of the $33. Other aspects that also added to cattle prices were the margins collected by packers and retailers. Now, in fact, the packer margin in October was up from a year earlier, but the retailer took it in the short, so to speak, and their margins were greatly under stress. Retailers were not passing along to consumers the full increases that were occurring in the wholesale market. In fact, we have not seen such large decline in retailer margins in the history of our data, which goes back over 25 years. If you net those two out, though, the impact there was significant and positive to the cattle market. And the last factor, number four, was byproduct value. That's very much tied to international markets, but byproducts along with meat components were greatly inflated during that period. Partly, too, we were replacing Canada for tongues and livers and hides, etc. But if we put those together in terms of general numbers, number two is probably in the range of $6 per hundredweight year-to-year increase in cattle prices. Number three is and number four together are about another $6 per hundredweight. And so the beef supply was about three times larger in terms of price impact than demand, but demand was a very important contributor to what prices that we received. But again, the point is that the supply side is number one. It explains about $21 per hundredweight, and that other $12 or so is these other factors, which were also positive. Now, rarely in history do you go back and find all these things lining up to the benefit of cattle prices. Now, I thought I'd just end my presentation. Those of you that know better know there's 54 more slides. And the dotted lines here that you're not supposed to be able to see are the top line is our 5 to 6 weight forecast for Southern Plains steer prices annual average. The next one is 7 to 8 weight steers basis of Southern Plains, and the green line is the fed cattle price. Now, the current dot up there where these are peaking at for fed cattle prices is this year, 2003. If you look at the top line as cow-calf producers, though, if you look very carefully, you'll see that we expect calf prices in calendar year 2004 to be above calendar year 2003. So our story is changing as market analysts. We've been saying for several years that cyclically the best cattle prices are ahead, and that story is now mostly still true. On fed cattle prices, we probably have put in our cyclical top in the fourth quarter of 2003. $1 a pound, $1.15 a pound for fed cattle. It's going to be, all these things are probably not going to come back together to get there again. But on calf prices, we would suspect that the first half of 2004, they post year-to-year increases. And we'll talk about the factors that could even get us the fourth quarter of 2004 equal to this year or maybe higher. And as we look out to 2006 here, those calf prices basis in Southern Plains, we still have on an annual basis over $1 a pound. Not much, but still basically compared to history in record high range. Okay, so the one thing I sort of forgot there for a cow-calf audience is cull cows. This is one thing we'll focus on a little bit later. But if you remember how fed cattle prices ran up this fall, cull cow prices are strong, but nothing like $33 per hundredweight above a year ago. I mean, they're on the order of $10 a hundredweight to $15 above a year ago. This cull cow market will probably be one of the most dynamic things that happens over the next 12 months. And we're going to talk about some of the reasons why. But just in terms of general sense here, cull cow prices are probably headed higher very strongly over the next several months, and fed cattle prices are headed lower over the next several months. Okay, so I'll take a little breath here. And this is a picture. There's a very healthy prickly pear cactus in the foreground. The little dots on the horizon are English cross calves. Precipitation in this zone is 16 to 18 inches per year. And so I could ask you where you thought that was, but I guess I'll just tell you. That's on the Parker Ranch on the Big Island of Hawaii. Now, across on the other side of the ridge is a rainforest. But on this side of the ridge, that looks a lot like much of this part of the country. Uh-oh. Somebody has to help me go backwards now because I had a lead finger. Okay, so with that little digression, let's talk about the big picture here in the meat market. Well, the big picture is you stand back on a per capita basis and you put turkey, chicken, pork, and beef together. This number is still large. It's declining this year. But the big picture is that we're not going to run out of any of this stuff in the domestic market. Let's talk about the pork side a little bit. I know you're a cow-calf audience, so I thought I'd spend the next hour talking about the pork complex. The bottom line here on the pork industry is that the pork industry is expanding faster than we thought just a few months ago. In fact, USDA, and I work for USDA, is one of my sets of organizations. Their hogs and pigs report in September was probably going to be revised come December 1, the report that comes out the end of this month. The hog industry is already expanding. Now, the second quarter of this year, or of 2004, we're not going to see much year-over-year increase. But by the time we get to the fourth quarter, it's growing faster than we anticipated. And USDA may show that it's even growing faster than we thought just a couple months ago. Certainly, by the time we get to 2005, we've got a lot of pork come ahead, and we're going to blow through the record pork production levels that were set back in 2002 that helped dampen our cattle market in 2002. So what about the other side of this competing meat? Well, that's the broiler market, and fundamentally, you can look at that chart. Now, the first half of 2003, broiler production didn't increase much. That industry really didn't start to see strength in prices till this summer. But as we look ahead, broiler production is ramping up very quickly. Egg sets out in the broiler industry are in 1 week recently were up 5% compared to a year ago. That becomes a lot of chicken meat in the marketplace. But as we look ahead, especially to 2005, we see at least 3% growth on, and 3% on a big number is a darn big number in terms of chicken tonnage in the marketplace. And one of the things that that industry is very dependent on is exports. Back in 2002, one thing that helped unravel our cattle markets was that dip out there in March in our exports thanks to the Russian situation. Now, this year we had a similar dip, but we were pulling back production, so our domestic market didn't have to absorb that. But looking ahead, when 17% of your product has to go overseas as an industry, if it does not go into foreign markets and it stays in the U.S. market, it's a big problem. And both pork and poultry production, the growth there, much of that is going to have to be absorbed in foreign markets, and that's one of the real question marks as we look ahead. Another important factor, especially from a cow-calf standpoint, and maybe one of the most critical factors to where calf prices will be over the next 2 years, is the corn market. Currently, corn market prices are above last year, but they're still very manageable from a cow-calf perspective. And why do we talk about corn prices? Well, this is feedlot cost of gain, and obviously somebody has to buy your animals. And we must remember the basic economics here. The two things that fundamentally drive calf prices are fed cattle prices and corn prices. And if corn prices go up by 10 cents a bushel year to year, so 10 cents above last year, calf prices, 5 to 6 weight steer calf prices, will drop by at least $1 per hundredweight. If we get into one of those corn situations where corn goes back to $5 per bushel, let's say it's currently $2.50 a bushel, what does that dollar do? Well, if you end up with a true short corn crop in the Midwest, you got to lower calf prices by $25 per hundredweight. So you go from a dollar calf to a 75-cent calf. This is very critical. We don't have huge carryover stocks in this industry. Now, the flip side is also true. The last 3 years in the Midwest, market analysts like myself have said, this corn crop doesn't look very good. It looks pretty dry in the Midwest. Well, what did we do in 2003? We had a record large corn crop and a record large yield. So the flip side is here, you can get even stronger calf prices than the fourth quarter of this year if you have a booming calf crop in 04 or corn crop in 04. What's the national average corn yield? This last year was 140 something. If we had a normal year in the Midwest without drought, we could have an 11 billion bushel corn crop, and that will light a fire under calf prices. So we're very sensitive to any swings here. We no longer, like in the 80s, have the government holding all kinds of corn to buffer your cattle market. And why do I stress the cattle market? Well, much of our increasing use in the corn market is in ethanol. And those ethanol plants are not going to shut down overnight if corn goes higher, especially if oil prices stay up. The poultry industry in the last short corn crop in 96, they didn't adjust at all. The pork industry didn't adjust at all. Exports adjusted dramatically, but we don't export as much corn as we used to, basically. So almost all of the fundamental adjustments from a short corn crop will fall on the heads of the cow-calf industry in the United States. It's one of the major things, fundamentally, that you need to be watching for. So what else is going on in this marketplace? Well, I still have not got to cow-calf, but let's talk about the macroeconomy. This is growth in the U.S. economy. It may not feel like it out there in the country, but we're at levels that we haven't seen since the recession of 2001. In fact, USDA, or the government, has revised these numbers even higher, so my chart is out of date. The U.S. economy ramped up this summer, and it's growing very quickly. The only thing we haven't created yet are any jobs out there. But fundamentally, in terms of underlying our beef demand surge that began this past summer, it's heavily tied to the U.S. economy. Now, also, what's come together here at the exact same time and has been beneficial to this $33 per hundredweight on Fed cattle prices is the world economy has also churned simultaneously stronger at the same time that the U.S. economy has. So Japan, for example, which has been basically in a depression for 10 years, is now coming out of it. The Asian economies are growing again. Now, this is all very tenuous, but this is critical, and especially if you think in terms of beef demand and long-term viability of the industry. But here's another sector that just happened domestically and internationally to come together at the right time for the beef industry. Okay, now he's going to talk about cows and calves, and first we'll talk about feedlots. Well, we don't need to spend a lot of time here, but we need to say that cattle feeding returns in 2003 were the largest in our data series. But one thing to note here, back in 75, the last time we got over $90 per head profits, the next year cow-calf returns went back into the red. And I suspect they will do the same thing in 2004. Why? Because we get those 7 to 8 weight prices bid up so high going into feedlots that you just can't make money. And we're already there. This is our, and we only use a 7 to 8 weight, and obviously you can place lighter weight animals, and there's lots of things we do in this industry. But if we look over history, our estimated break-evens for a 7 to 8 weight steer placed in November is going to come out with a break-even of nearly 90 cents in the Southern Plains in a commercial lot. You know, and I'm saying that the fed cattle market will probably be in the 80s. So, you know, it's been really good, but these things don't last forever. So that's the fed cattle side. It's been great. It's been as supportive as it can be of your calf prices. Now we're going to talk about pasture and range conditions. He just changes gears all the time. But the blue line, again, is 2003. The dotted line is last year. So nationwide, and this is pasture poor and very poor. The bottom line is that in 2003, pasture and range conditions were better than 2002 nationwide. And in 2002, during that late summer, we had nearly 50%, nearly one half of the nation's beef cows were in range condition areas that were ungrazable. Half of the cows, beef cows, were in ungrazable parts of the nation. Now, 2003 was an improvement, but it wasn't any great year. And that dotted line, or the red line, the five-year average, includes the drought of 2001. So, you know, maybe drought's normal, but, you know, we've had a real tough go in pasture and range conditions. You thought I was talking about pasture and range, but I was talking about the cattle cycle, the cattle inventory cycle. The drought of the last 3 years nationwide has had a definite impact on cow-calf decision-making and has now made the blue line there. This is currently the longest cattle cycle on record and really the longest liquidation phase in a cattle cycle on record. And so I just throw up another chart here, but let's stand back from that and let's talk about how these things change. Well, the only thing to really notice here is that the blue bars are year-to-year changes and the red bars are year-to-year declines in that inventory. But look at that. this cattle cycle will not turn like in the 70s or 80s when we had a million head or more heifers going from the slaughter pipeline into the replacement heifer pipeline in 1 year. This cycle will be very much muted, and probably future cycles on the inventory side will be very much muted. And why is that? Well, I keep putting up the same old chart. I just haven't told you that the lines are all the same, but I add one other line to it. And this time we have the inventory line, the blue line, but with beef tonnage. And we produce a lot more beef with every animal, and that's one reason, the significant reason, that the old cattle cycle logic, the cattle cycle, is alive and well. But it has changed, and it has adapted, and it is much harder to sort out than it was in the 70s or 80s or even the early 90s turn in the cattle cycle. Okay, so where are we in this cattle cycle? Well, this is beef cow slaughter. And if you stand back and look at that, you'd say in the U.S., especially considering that since the summer, there's been no Canadian beef cows come to the U.S. to be slaughtered, that clearly we're slaughtering enough beef cows that there's no holdback in beef cows nationwide. Let's talk about and digress a little bit. So why were those dairy cow or cull cow prices under pressure? Well, they've been under pressure because of dairy cow slaughter, which has been up all year and really dampened prices in the fourth quarter, and it's capped those prices. Now we probably liquidated 2 million head of dairy cows in the United States this last year. It'll be down over 2%, and they're going to shut this off very quickly. The only reason we got some of this late in the year is the dairy industry has its own buyout program. The picture is going to change greatly as we get into 2004. That dairy cow slaughter will not be there. And as a cow-calf producer, if you're thinking about your culling strategy, you need to sort of take a peek at the futures market at the milk prices in there. Those are going to start coming up, and the dairy industry is going to be done slaughtering animals. What about on the heifer side? Well, the heifer side, even through the summer, that heifer slaughter said we're not holding back heifers in the United States. Now, late this year, the heifer slaughter fell off, but so did steer slaughter. So heifer relative to steer, basically it says that we have not held back heifers yet in the United States to start building our cow herd. This is the mid-year inventory, and it shows that really the only states that had a year-to-year increase were in the Southern Plains, Texas and Oklahoma, states that have not had drought. And we suspect this cattle cycle in terms of a building up of heifers and a growing of the fundamental beef cow herd will be driven, and it will come out of the Southern Plains and move to the north. So what? Here's the same old chart, but with another aspect stuck on there. And these are our estimated cow-calf returns. And the thing to notice is that in 2002, you know, because of drought, and these are based on the Southern Plains, so there's a lot of drought impact in here. It wasn't a great year in cow-calf country. It was a positive year of cash returns. But this year, 2003, finally gets us up to levels where we really get excited in ranching country nationwide about holding back animals. So where do we think these numbers are on January 1, 2004? Well, clearly, we're going to set another record for length of cattle cycle. The cattle inventory will be down about 1% from a year ago. The number of beef cows will be down maybe 0.5% from a year ago. The number of dairy cows will be down 2% from a year ago. The number of feeder cattle that have come in from Canada will be well down from a year ago. The only thing that will be up from a year ago is the number of feeder cattle that have come in from Mexico. So we're still in a liquidation phase of the cattle cycle in the United States. We have not yet turned the corner, which bodes well for us from a cyclical standpoint for what calf prices will be. Okay, so that's the cattle cycle. Now we just change gears again, and I'll talk about the meat market. And, you know, they're going, I wish his voice would just die. The point to notice from this graph is the front and the back of the carcass represent about 51% of the carcass. So let's talk about the meat side a little bit. And during the early parts of the decades here, and this only an economist could love this graphic, but the bottom line is this is a round, the chucks do the same thing, relative to the overall wholesale market, or what we call the beef cutout. So it's a ratio. The bottom line of this graph is that, you know, during the 70s, 80s, and most of the 90s, that the drag on value of a carcass, and hence on an animal, was the value of the chuck and the round. It was pulling down all the value, and it wasn't contributing much. And then in 1998, as Dr. Purcell, this was a fundamental shift. We started to find new products. We also found growing export markets for these products in Mexico and Korea. Mexico and Korea don't buy middle meats. They buy a lot of chucks and rounds. But the picture has changed. Much of it thanks again to new products, new awareness, but it's a fundamental shift. So that's a positive. And let's look more recently. Well, the good old bottom round there spiked up really good, but it's come back strongly. It's almost back to year ago levels after spiking up. We're starting to get Canadian product moving in, but again, and we've lost some shipments to Mexico and Korea, very price-sensitive markets. What has held up very well? Well, thanks to the strong U.S. economy, things like a rib roast haven't really tapered off at all. The consumer is back. The consumer is back for high-value beef. They've changed since the last year, and they're buying higher-value cuts, even at these very high prices. If you look at a tenderloin, it still has come down dramatically, but it's still way above and not come down near proportionally like a chuck and a round. So why do I talk about all that? Well, I really don't know. Dr. Rush said fill time. But let's look at it in the broader context. This is the cutout value. This is new thanks to mandatory price reporting, and we now know what packers get for many of these wholesale prices. So here we have the prime cutout value, which is the green bar, the branded product cutout value, the choice cutout value, the select like we've had historically, and the ungraded cutout value. One of the things to note here is that much of the run-up happened in those branded choice and the primes, and the select and the ungraded cutout values really didn't participate very much in this rally. And if we look at that primal middle meats, it's the same story. What's really carried value here has been the prime, very tight supplies of that product, and consumer good demand, the choice and the branded things. But the select and the ungraded not. And that's the middle meats, and that's what's driven your marketplace. But let's look at things like chucks and rounds. Those have gone up, but they've all gone up proportionally. When you take a carcass apart, a prime chuck or round is worth the same as a select chuck or round. A choice chuck or round is worth the same as an ungraded chuck or round. The same as a prime chuck or round. You know, the parts of the carcass are different. And so when you talk about feeding animals, you need to recognize that 51% of the carcass, if it's grade prime or choice, doesn't bring any premium in the wholesale market. Think about a prime chuck. How much fat is in that? I digress. But now let me come back to fundamental beef demand. All these things, beef demand is the most complex things to get your arm around. As economists, we've worked for decades trying to better understand beef demand. And we don't know much more than we knew 20 years ago. But we know it's improved in recent years. We try to take all this very dynamic meat industry and distill it down to one set of numbers, which really hides all the fun stuff in the marketplace. Beef demand, we're estimating here for 2003, is up about 5% from a year ago. Really good compared to 20 years of decline. Now, as we look ahead on beef demand here for the balance of this year and next year, we're going to get a lot of competition from the pork and poultry. We got new products. We've got a very strong U.S. economy. We've got a growing world economy. But beef demand fundamentally is going to run into the head wall of competing meat supplies and competing meat prices. Now, the consumer, if this number stays stagnant in 04, is still going to have tastes and preferences that like your product, in contrast to most of the 70s and 80s. And many things are going to be helpful, but the fundamental thing holding back beef demand as we look ahead are probably those competing meat supplies. But this has added significantly to your prices. If we look at the fourth quarter of this year, this number is almost off the charts by historical standards. Beef demand's probably up about 9% compared to last year. It's not up 20%, and it didn't explain but $6 of this $33 fed cattle market, but it's darn important, especially in the long term. Because in the long term, supplies are coming back into balance. And the industry's changed a lot. When we get a lot of product in the marketplace, we just have sales out there. We make buy one, get one free. That's how retailers respond if they have a whole bunch of chicken they couldn't send to Russia. You buy one, they give you another one free. The other thing that's changed in the marketplace, and I like this one, because if you log off the internet in Denver, this pops up on your screen, and it says, if you'll put in your King Super card number, we'll send you coupons automatically. They'll be credited to your King Super card automatically, and when you check out of the grocery store, you no longer have to carry coupons. It also says in the fine print up there that if you play this game, King Supers will know about more about what you buy than you know about what you buy. But again, the point is the world has changed rather dramatically in the meat marketing side. 4 years ago, we did not price the sales using a King Super card or a special. We lowered prices at the counter and asked the consumer to buy. The game is not played that way anymore. And much of it moves through these wholesale stores, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the meat side of the industry. Now let's move quickly on to exports and imports. That was pretty quick, wasn't it? But clearly, as we talked about the international side, this key underlying factor was closing the Canadian border. Now, what we did to Canada and what the world did to Canada, thanks to that one BSE cow, thanks to that, was much more than close the border. Canada has been isolated from the world marketplace. We just didn't close the U.S. border. The world closed their borders to Canada. So Canada could not compete with us in Korea or Mexico or Japan with our product or their animals. So what's happened here? Well, right after the May announcement, we got a real surge in U.S. beef exports and the blue line there. And last year, that dotted line in October, remember what we had last year? We closed those docks on the West Coast. So if you read in the media that in October, beef exports were up a bunch, it's up because we couldn't export it last year because the ships were all stuck at the dock. But notice that the blue line has come back to a more normal pattern. We got the benefit from the export market, but there's not a lot more to be gained because we priced beef so high now that it's running into resistance in the export market. And the hardest line to see there is the green line, and that's Korea, the most price-sensitive market, and our exports to Korea have dropped off dramatically. But the most interesting line there is the bottom line, the dark line, and that's our beef exports to Canada. We closed the border. They've got all these cattle up there. You'd think they'd eat their own beef, wouldn't you? Well, they're still importing significant amounts of U.S. beef. Why is that? Well, we have a darn good product. But what we really send to Canada is not chucks and rounds. We send middle meats and further processed beef items. What do they send to us and the rest of the world? They eat almost all their tenderloins in Canada and almost all their prime ribs. And they buy from here along with processed meat, and they ship and compete with us in the world market in the chucks and round arena, especially in Mexico and Korea. So you would think that this would all be clear cut. They're not sending, you know, we're not buying their product. They sure wouldn't want to buy ours, but fundamental reason is we don't ship carcasses around the world. We don't ship carcasses around the United States. It's meat products that move across borders, and that often gets lost in the industry when we come up with some of our political solutions. Notice that little editorial comment there. Cattle imports from Canada went to zero, and we dropped off. If we put cattle and meat and all that into one unit called live animals and estimate, you know, our imports from Canada dropped off dramatically, but now we're starting to get the select cuts and chucks and rounds coming back here. So we had a strong benefit there in many ways that will start to erode, barring further discoveries of BSE problems in Canada. We are replacing some of the Canadian feeder cattle with Mexican cattle. Now that large sucking sound that you hear, though, is on this side of the border. It's U.S. feedlots chasing those Mexican calves and sucking them to this side of the border. And what's happened in Canada? Well, initially in Canada, the blue line, their slaughter had to drop off dramatically. They couldn't even kill the animals. But look what's happened in more recent weeks. And some of them are hidden by the red line because the very recent weeks are right behind the red line. They have ramped back up to much more normal slaughter levels. And so we're past much of that huge shock in the marketplace. Let's talk about the U.S. And, oh, I was supposed to go back, but let's stop there. Pretend that's a picture of a Canadian feedlot. I had one more comment on Canada. Canada's cattle on feed numbers now are 71% of a year ago, down 29% from a year ago. The only cattle they placed in the feedlots are 800 pounds and heavier above a year ago. So they're only forcing cattle into feedlots that have to go there. All the calves are still out in the country in Canada. They're responding much like we do when we have a corn market disaster in the U.S. and corn goes to $5 a bushel. What happens? You can't feed those cattle. Those lightweight animals have to be held to yearlings on some kind of forage program somewhere. Canadians are doing the same thing. So they're, in essence, their cattle on feed numbers are pretty muted, and they're down 29% from a year ago. So how are they going to send? They're going to send more cattle to the U.S. at some point in time, but they can't ramp up as fast as probably the futures markets seem to think here on the Fed cattle side. So they're going to send more as soon as we open the border. And our estimates assume that the Canadian border, so next week I will change this because it may be later, but our estimates say today that we may add lead animals across that are under 30 months of age directly for slaughter, maybe about April. By the time you get all the paperwork and all the logistics done, it's maybe April. It could be June or July. But will it be a flood of cattle? I think the futures market's a little too scared that it's a flood of cattle. There will be more cattle, but I don't think it's a flood of cattle. Now, in the United States, our cattle on feed numbers are currently above a year ago, and we suspect on December 1, they'll be 5% above a year ago. Now, how did we do that? How did we get more cattle in feedlots than a year ago when we got a cyclically smaller cow herd? Well, part of the reason is, and the most important reason is, this year they did not go to wheat pasture and other winter grazing programs on the left coast especially. Wheat pasture, there's very few cattle compared to a year ago on wheat pasture. They've gone directly into feed yards, especially in the southern plains. Southern plains feed yards are very full compared to a year ago. Second factor of why this can be, well, the USDA cattle on feed report only reflects feedlots with more than 1,000 head capacity. And we think, especially in the Midwest, and maybe some in this part of the country, that there's less cattle on feed in these less than 1,000 head capacity feed yards, and they've been bid away from them by the larger commercial cattle feeders. So don't overreact if the report comes out and says 5% more than a year ago cattle on feed. We're certainly doing everything we can to push cattle into feed yards at these high prices, and we're going to see larger slaughter levels for some weeks than a year ago. But remember that it's going to be muted a little bit. It's probably only 5% more cattle on feed, may not even translate into 1% more steers and heifers being slaughtered. We expect markings will be well down in this report, and placements might be slightly above after the big surge in October. Placements would be down a little bit. And that's all very interesting, but the most important story is in the last cattle on feed report was interpreted as a little bit bearish. The marketings were down. The marketings compared to the number of cattle that were ready to be marketed, we did a darn good job. This industry is still very current and in very good shape as we look ahead. Prices will erode, but likely not collapse. The cattle feeder still has the upper hand from a supply side standpoint. And what happens when you have that kind of situation? Well, what happened this last year was the futures market kept saying that cattle prices are going to be lower, they're going to be lower, they're going to be lower. And so we marketed aggressively, and then the Canadian thing hit, and this has kept cattle weights very much in check. And how does 2004 unfold becomes the major question mark. So we look ahead to 2004, will we have the futures market above the cash market, and will feedlots stay very current? And then probably my price forecasts are too low. Or are we going to go back to a more normal weight profile situation, and feedlots are going to start squawking out there in the country, you know, I bought these expensive feeder cattle, I got to feed them longer to try to break even, which is always the first step towards trying to back up cattle. That'll be the fight that's going on. Very expensive feeder cattle. Will the futures be enough incentive to keep us current, or will we fall back to our normal ways and say, I got to cheapen up? And the replacement animal is going to be expensive to go into the feed yard. The feedlot's going to have a logic, and he's going to be right, but it depends. And you kind of can pick one or two of these scenarios. So the people that have much higher prices than we're forecasting are banking on 04 being like 03. And the people that have much lower prices than we're forecasting are saying, you know, cattle feeders are going to develop a backlog of cattle by next week, which I think is wrong also. So where does this put us? Well, as we look ahead in terms of our beef production will be down probably in the first quarter of 04. Most of that decline because cow kill will be well down in the first two-thirds of 04 and probably for the whole year. Steer and heifer slaughter will be flat, up some weeks, down some weeks. Second quarter, you know, similar. The long-term trend here, though, is that beef production by the fourth quarter of 04 will be above this year's fourth quarter, but still very manageable, still a market that can get you in the 70s, maybe a weekly top at 80 cent feds. That may be a little optimistic, but it depends on how much pork and chicken's out there. So as we look ahead on the price scenario, how do we manage this? Well, back to our overall story, cyclically, the cattle market, cyclically tight supplies. We're not going to have any more cattle 2 years from now than we have today. In fact, we'll have less as soon as we start holding back heifers. The demand picture is still bright. The economy is moving. That's the most important factor in influencing demand is the overall U.S. economy. Tastes and preferences, actions, diets, new products, on and on. All those signs are positive. The one negative on the demand side is competing meats and beef prices relative to chicken and pork prices. Now, on the cow side, I think this market has a chance to really run. Dairy cow slaughter will be down significantly in 2004. Beef cow slaughter will probably be down in 2004. Canada, we won't be importing. Almost all Canadian bulls are slaughtered in the U.S., and a large proportion of Canadian cull cows are slaughtered in the U.S. historically. Those animals will not be coming here. Further, there will be no beef from Canadian animals over 30 months of age, the definition of a cow and bull, basically, coming to the United States. So we're going to have to grind some chucks and rounds in the United States, try to make enough hamburger to fill our marketplace. So these cull cow prices have a chance to really run and to run high as fed cattle prices are declining. I think if you're managing your cull cows over the next 2 or 3 years, it's something that as a rancher pay much more attention to than you've had to in the last 2 or 3 years. If I had cull cows sitting on my ranch today and I had a good supply of forage, I wouldn't sell them today. I'd sell them March or April. Could be a very lucrative proposition. Now, those of you that know me know that I cannot predict the future. I'm basing this on where we are in the cattle cycle and the information we know today. But we know we could find a BSE cow in the United States, and this, you know, you wouldn't want to own a cow if that's the situation. So take it in context. This is what we know to this point in time, and we're not predicting the future, but we're saying what the future likely holds if everything sort of stays constant. Only economists can hold everything constant, but, you know, I'm going to do that. On the cow-calf side, I think these strong prices remain. I think next fall we could have lower calf prices, but they could be higher with a boomer corn crop in the Midwest. We'll still mostly have dollar calves for the next 2 years. Earlier in my lifetime when I was at the University of Nebraska, if I would have said for the next 2 years, we're going to have 2 more years of dollar calves, you would have booed me out of the room. But that's the type of environment that we're fundamentally in without a major shock. You know, FMD in the U.S., terrorist attack in the U.S., we all remember September 11th. Many things can go wrong, drought, all that. And the key in cow-calf country is what happens. Are we going to have another drought year in 2004? If we don't, the picture changes very quickly. And if I'm a rancher out there and I'm understocked, and I don't know what Mother Nature is going to bring, but you got to be working at it already. If we have good spring grass conditions and you're understocked, you better be working yesterday trying to find calves to put on grass or find cows to bring in and put on your grass. Or be thinking about how much can I afford to play for a replacement heifer, given that I'm going to have 2 or 3 more good years, and we're going to start eroding these calf prices again, probably about 2006 rather significantly, maybe 2007, but certainly over the lifetime of any heifer I bring into the herd, even if it's a bred heifer this year. On the feeder cattle side, I think the top is in the 7 to 8 weight steer market. And those of you thinking about going back to cow yearling programs, those are going to be hard to pencil. It's going to be hard to pencil summer stocker programs for the next couple of years. Fed cattle market, the top's in. That doesn't mean there won't be opportunities out there in the fed cattle marketplace. So I think if I look ahead, there's major shocks that can happen. I'm obviously very concerned about corn crops and what that might do to calf prices. But I think fundamentally, this has to be a very optimistic time. This also has to be a time where I'm positioning my cow-calf operation to take advantage of where I am in the cattle cycle. Cattle prices will come back down, but we have a good 2 to 3 year run in here, I think, still ahead of us. Now, if you're sitting on a bunch of calves here today and you haven't sold them yet, you know, early next year, a 7 to 8 weight steer is going to be lower than it is today. Those prices have got to come lower with the fed cattle market. I'd be very concerned. When are we going to open the Canadian border? I don't know exactly. But the futures market is saying April. I don't want to have a 7 to 8 weight steer. It's going to be like those years where there's a whole bunch of cattle on wheat pasture and they come off in that March, April time frame. We potentially have those 7 to 8 weight prices backing off in that time frame as the fed cattle market has to adjust lower. So I'd want to move those heavier yearling animals, you know, earlier in 2004 rather than later in 2004. I'd be shooting for a February-March marketing date rather than a March-April kind of marketing date. But it's always nice to speak on a year when prices are high. And I know it's been tough, especially in this part of the country, because there's been a lot of drought. And some of you haven't been able to fully take advantage of this. But the flip side also is that there's still a few more good years. I think if you run a sharp pencil to the situation, you can take advantage of it. Thank you very much for your attention and putting up with my voice.